I'm Tracy Sable. Tonight on EWTN News Nightly, 1 week to go. Vice President Harris and former President Trump are making their closing arguments to voters. We have the latest. Big Sky Showdown. The race for Montana's Senate seat heats up in what could decide the balance of power on Capitol Hill. Deadly flooding. The Philippines is recovering from yet another tropical storm. We hear about efforts on the ground from Catholic Relief Services. Plus, major selling point. Learn more about a shopping center in Mexico with a devotion to Our Lady. These stories and more tonight.
From EWTN, the Global Catholic Network, this is EWTN News Nightly.
Thank you for being with us on the Feast of St. Narcissus. Our top story tonight, with exactly 1 week until Election Day, November 5th, Vice President Kamala Harris says the race is going to be extremely close. And Donald Trump is promising, if elected, America will achieve success that no one can imagine. Tonight, both campaigns continue fighting for the votes in the closing days of what has been an intensely fierce race for the nation's highest political office. White House correspondent Owen Jensen reports. Owen.
Tracy, good evening to you. Vice President Kamala Harris delivers a big speech here in D.C., her closing argument. And former President Donald Trump will hold a rally in Allentown, Pennsylvania. The finish line coming into view.
At his Mar-a-Lago club in Palm Beach, Florida, Donald Trump tells supporters the election is going very well.
I appreciate everybody's work, and the spirit is unbelievable. I don't think there's ever been anything like it in our country's history, frankly, because we want to see our country get better.
And moments later, he blasted Kamala Harris.
In less than 4 years, Kamala Harris has obliterated our borders, obliterated. We've never had a situation like this.
In Saginaw, Michigan, Trump's running mate, J.D. Vance, continued along that theme.
The only way we're going to get our country back is if we do what Donald J. Trump has promised, use the United States military against those Mexican drug cartels and make America safe for American citizens again.
Meanwhile, Democratic vice presidential nominee Tim Walz visits Savannah, Georgia, urging supporters to the polls.
So, folks, make a plan to vote. Make a plan to get somebody to vote. If you can volunteer, we've got great teams out here. Knock a couple doors, call people. This takes your anxiety away because you're in the fight. You're making it happen. And for all of you, you're here because you believe in the promise of America.
And with Election Day a week away, President Joe Biden travels to the Port of Baltimore to highlight his efforts with Vice President Harris in promoting clean energy while protecting and creating good-paying union jobs.
That's why today I'm proud to announce we're delivering $3 billion in funding from my Inflation Reduction Act to help clean up and modernize ports in 27 different states and territories.
For now, both campaigns continue full speed ahead. Next up, Trump visiting North Carolina and Wisconsin, where former Packers quarterback Brett Favre will join him for a rally in Green Bay. Vice President Kamala Harris, in her speech tonight near the White House and Washington Monument, will be trying to reach for a big moment while seeking momentum, with time running out in this race. At the White House, Owen Jensen, EWTN News Nightly.
Well, the head of the diocese in Puerto Rico is demanding an apology from Donald Trump. Archbishop Roberto Gonzalez Nieves says that in response to a stand-up comedian's comments at a rally for the former president in New York.
You know, there's a lot going on. Like, I don't know if you guys know this, but there's literally a floating island of garbage in the middle of the ocean right now. Yeah, I think it's called Puerto Rico.
And an open letter to the former president, the archbishop says in part, quote, I enjoy a good joke. However, humor has its limits. It should not insult or denigrate the dignity and sacredness of people. Hinchcliffe's remarks do not only provoke sinister laughter, but hatred. These kinds of remarks do not have a place in a society founded upon liberty and justice for all. Hinchcliffe's remarks do not promote a climate of equality, fraternity, and goodwill among and for all women and men of every race, color, and way of life, which is the foundation of the American dream. These kinds of remarks should not be a part of the political discourse of a civilized society. Trump campaign senior advisor Danielle Alvarez issued a statement saying this joke does not reflect the views of President Trump or the campaign. Well, several states are in play that will determine which party controls the U.S. Senate when the new Congress starts in January. Republicans want to flip Montana, where the Native American vote could have a major impact on the outcome. The state also has an abortion initiative on the ballot. Capitol Hill correspondent Eric Rosales joins us now with more on that. Eric.
Well, good evening, Tracy. Yes, let's start in Montana's tribal vote. In the 1992 election, the Democrat beat the Republican largely due to a heavy Native American turnout. Why? A challenge was made between two leading tribes for a single buffalo. But in the election just 4 years ago, the tribal vote was dismal. Well, today, both candidates are courting Native American voters and believe that they could be the key to winning.
Montana is a small state, only two congressional districts, and they have a significant voting block of Native Americans.
Political experts say Native Americans are always an important voting block in Montana, where they make up 6.5% of the population. But this November, their involvement could potentially impact the entire nation. Control of the U.S. Senate may hang on the outcome of Montana's Senate race, where Democratic Senator John Tester is up for re-election. He's facing off against Republican Tim Sheehy, whom former President Donald Trump has endorsed. Polls have Sheehy narrowly leading Tester in the home stretch, 50-46%. This year, an abortion amendment is also on the ballot. Currently, abortion in Montana is legal until fetal viability.
I want to see Roe reinstated. And I think this initiative, this ballot initiative that's going to be on the ballot, will do exactly that. It will enshrine it into the Constitution so that women can make their own health care decisions.
The people of Montana vote for it and it passes, then it's the law of the land. But what the Democrats have been pushing is, quite frankly, the most extreme abortion legislation in the world. And I'll not apologize for wanting to protect the life of an unborn child.
Montana's Catholic leaders say the way the abortion initiative is worded would allow the state to regulate abortion after fetal viability, except when, quote, medically indicated to protect the life or health of the pregnant patient, opens the door to late-term abortions.
They tried to convey that this is only going to be for pre-viability abortions. The reality is the standard that one would have to meet to uphold a restriction post-viability is so outrageous that this will allow abortion through all 9 months.
All the bishops in Montana even signed a letter urging Catholics in the state to defeat the amendment. They say that it would cause pain for the unborn. At the Capitol, Eric Rosales, EWTN News Nightly.
On new developments in the fires at ballot drop boxes in Washington and Oregon, authorities say that a preliminary probe finds incendiary devices were used and the two fires are connected. The events were also connected to another incident at a drop box in Vancouver earlier this month. In that incident, no ballots were damaged. And if you plan on mailing in your ballot this year, time is ticking. The U.S. Postal Service says today is the deadline to ensure that it gets delivered on time. Most states require that election officials have the ballots before polls close on election day. If you did not get a chance to mail it today, well, there should be time left. The Postal Service says do it sooner rather than later. Well, the owner of the Washington Post newspaper says the decision to block an endorsement of Vice President Kamala Harris was, quote, principled. Billionaire businessman Jeff Bezos made the remarks in a note to readers last night. The decision is having a ripple effect. Three of the nine people who served on the paper's editorial board have resigned. And a report says around 200,000 people have canceled their subscriptions. This comes as the owner of the Los Angeles Times also blocked an endorsement of Harris. And today, yet another publication is refusing to endorse a candidate. USA Today says that none of its 200-plus local affiliates will endorse either candidate. All right, now to the Middle East, and dozens of people are dead following an Israeli airstrike in Lebanon. The strikes hit in the Baqa Valley amid a day of heightened intensity. Israel also targeted a five-story building that was sheltering displaced Palestinians. Israel says expanded ground operations in Gaza are focused on finding all remaining militants. And this comes as Israel passes legislation that restricts the UN agency responsible for aid distribution in Gaza. The bill bans the United Nations Relief and Works Agency for Palestine refugees from conducting any activity or providing any service inside of Israel. The vote passed following a fiery debate. UNRWA officials say they oppose the move.
But if implemented, it would be absolutely devastating. We have a population here that's on its knees, going through absolutely untold misery and suffering. And the role that UNRWA is playing here is unprecedented for any other humanitarian organization anywhere in the world.
And this comes as Hezbollah says that it has chosen a new leader. Sheikh Naim Qassem was a top deputy for more than 3 decades. He says that he will push forward, quote, until victory is achieved. And for analysis, let's bring in Emanuele Adelangi, senior fellow at the Foundation for Defense of Democracies, who focuses on Lebanon, Hezbollah, and Israel. Emanuele, thank you so much for your time today. A lot to cover here, but first, let's talk about the new leader of Hezbollah and what we need to know about him.
Good to be with you. The new leader of Hezbollah, it will come to you as a great surprise, is not going to be a significant difference from his predecessor. He is a veteran of the senior leadership of Hezbollah for decades, has been in the shadows of his predecessor, the late Hassan Nasrallah, and his public utterances are very much in line with the rhetoric that Hezbollah offered us before. His speech today essentially is one of defiance, is one that repeats the notion that Israel is engaged in a war of conquest on behalf or with the support of the United States to destroy and occupy Lebanon, that there is a world conspiracy and that Hezbollah stands defiant to fight it. It minimized the losses of Hezbollah. It examined the damages inflicted upon Israelis by Hezbollah. He claims that Hezbollah is fighting a defensive war, although they opened fire first on October 8th of last year, a day after Hamas massacred thousands of Israelis and took many hundreds hostages. So it's more of the same. The real question is, one, is he going to last, given that the Israelis have shown incredible knowledge of the whereabouts of the senior leadership of Hezbollah in the past 2 months and have eliminated most of them. Two, is he feeling safe in Lebanon? There are reports that after the death of Nasrallah, he was swiftly whisked out of Lebanon to Tehran. And how is he going to lead the organization from afar? And three, whether the decimation of the senior leadership of Hezbollah, both in the field of battle and as political cadres of leadership, will the organization be able to reconstitute itself quickly under his leadership?
Yeah. Before we run out of time here, I want to talk about the banning of UNRWA inside of Israel. The Knesset passed 2 bills on Monday, one banning Israeli authorities' contact with the group and the other barring the UN group from activity inside of Israel. What more can you tell us about why Israel will no longer allow the aid group in the country, and what impact will this have on Palestinian refugees there?
One proximate reason and one sort of more structural one. The proximate reason, of course, is that for over a year now, evidence has emerged of collusion by UNRWA with Hamas, the fact that numerous members of Hamas, including fighters, were identified as working for UNRWA. Clearly, UNRWA has been giving cover to Hamas and its horrific activities. So that's the first reason. And despite efforts by Israel to, bring this information to light, lobby the world to recognize the problem with UNRWA, there's been pushback, and UNRWA has continued to pretend that it's business as usual. But the more structural, longer-term issue is that, of course, UNRWA is not there to take care of refugees and help them sort of settle and integrate into a new society like the other UN agency in charge of refugees everywhere else in the world does. UNRWA is there to perpetuate the refugee problem. We're talking about 80 years of refugees, 4 generations, that have not been allowed to resettle, have not been allowed to take up citizenship in the places of reference, to move on with their lives. And UNRWA essentially is there to continue perpetuating the refugee problem and sustain the Palestinian demand for a full return of these millions of people inside of Israel, which would be the death of Israel as a Jewish state. So you have two problems here. One, that is longer term, the very nature of UNRWA is problematic, and two, the fact that it's been complicit with Hamas. And so when you combine these two, I think that after a year of efforts to highlight the problem, Israel has decided that UNRWA will no longer be able to operate in Israel. We'll continue to be able to care for Palestinian refugees in other places, such as Lebanon, where once again there are hundreds of thousands of Palestinians who have been denied the right to settle, to take up citizenship, to access jobs for now 80 years, and UNRWA still takes care of them.
Well, Emanuele, I thank you so much for your insights. We really appreciate your time.
Thank you so much.
And we have a lot more still to come here on EWTN News Nightly, including signature moment. Pro-lifers in the UK send a message to the prime minister and a report from the Philippines as the recovery begins after a deadly storm. Online petition asking for the protection of silent prayer outside of abortion businesses in the UK has received nearly 60,000 signatures. The open letter urges the Prime Minister to allow silent prayer outside of abortion clinics and comes following the recent arrest of several pro-lifers for violating so-called buffer laws designed to ban demonstrations outside of the clinics. All right, now to the Philippines, where they are feeling the effects from the outer bands of Typhoon Congrey. This follows Tropical Storm Trami, which hit the island last week, claiming the lives of more than 125 people. This video showing students delivering relief to flood-stricken families. The majority Catholic country is also dealing with landslides from Tropical Storm Trami. All right, let's bring in Caroline Brennan, Humanitarian Communications Director with Catholic Relief Services. Caroline, good to be with you today. We appreciate it. As we know, the Philippines is considered one of the most disaster-prone countries in the world and is often hit by typhoons and tropical storms. But that said, how do you think this one compares to others?
It's such a great question because there are so many communities that are resilient and have taken measures to be resilient to storms in this climate-ridden country of many storms every year. And yet, many communities have been describing this as the worst crisis they've experienced in living memory. The waters alone were so heavy, the storms. It wasn't even that how the storm hit the island, but the rainwaters that came flooding into these communities. It was more rainwater in 10 hours than many communities had experienced in 6 months. So it left floodwaters rushing, covering the roofs of homes, and those triggered these deadly landslides that buried so many homes. And with that, you have displaced families across the region, the affected areas, many of whom are staying in evacuation centers and others who are staying outside just trying to have protection from the elements.
Yeah, it's so hard to imagine. What have you all been doing, Catholic Relief Services, to help those impacted?
So we are working with our Catholic partners, Caritas Philippines, and our government and other partners to provide urgent relief, to do assessments. Our teams have been on the ground this past week, meeting with communities, and urgently people need food, water, clean water. As you can imagine, a lot of water systems are terribly damaged. Safe shelter, and safe means to have protection within these overcrowded shelters. As you can imagine, for many people, there's a heightened risk involved in being overcrowded conditions, especially for women and for girls. So providing bedding supplies, hygiene kits, things of that nature for people to have protection from the elements. But also we're very mindful of the emotional needs as well, the non-physical needs, as people are grieving their loved ones, what has been lost of their homes. Homes are so much more than the shelters and structures around us. There are memories, there are hopes, our dreams in many cases. And so helping people manage that anxiety and distress and plan for what is next when they are able to return to where they were living before and start rebuilding again. So it's very much assistance that will span these urgent needs and support people's long-term recovery with our local partners and government systems.
Well, you all do wonderful work. You're doing God's work, and we know they need our prayers as well. So we're praying for everyone in the Philippines. Thank you so much, Caroline, for what you do. We appreciate it. God bless.
Thank you so much.
Well, there is a new rule for travelers on U.S. Airlines who are dealing with a significantly delayed or canceled flight, and it may be some good news. Before your next takeoff, take a look at your new passenger rights. The Transportation Secretary took to Twitter to say the automatic airfare refund rules are now in effect, adding airlines are required to provide prompt cash refunds without passengers having to ask. If your flight is disrupted and you don't rebook, you get an automatic cash refund within 20 days. That applies to cancellations, domestic delays of 3 or more hours, and international delays of at least 6 hours. Separate rules mandate a luggage fee refund if you don't get a bag by a certain time, and refunds for prepaid services like seat selection and Wi-Fi if you don't receive them. Some airlines already had similar policies, but the rule sets a standard across the industry and eliminates the need for customers to navigate the airline systems to request a refund. Senator Maria Cantwell is the chair of Committee on Commerce, Science and Transportation. She introduced the legislation to codify new flyer protections into law, speaking about it on the Senate floor in May.
These statutory rights are a big win for consumers. Passengers can just reject vouchers, alternative flights, and get a hassle-free refund.
A group representing major airlines says it's on board with automatic refunds, though the rules have faced pushback from the industry. At least one airline, Delta, is under investigation for allegedly not following the refund law over the summer after global issues caused massive cancellations. And up next on EWTN News Nightly, protection of minors. The Vatican Commission responding to clergy sexual abuse releases its first annual report. In the chase for votes in Pennsylvania, one Republican worker thought that he had found a discrepancy. Address near a Catholic church with more than 50 registered voters. He posted his findings on social media. The problem, there are actually 50-plus people living there, and they're all nuns from the Benedictine Sisters of Erie.
So when I read it, I was in shock. And then I read it again, and I was outraged because the actual post talks about sending someone to our monastery, the person comes in and the sister here says, no one lives here. And then it went on to list the names, the ages, the affiliation of each sister in the monastery. So that was very, very alarming. One, our privacy was violated. And two, the utter deception and the misinformation that was present in that post. And that post has been viewed by almost 3 million people.
Sister Stephanie Schmidt also says that no decision has been made on whether to pursue legal action and that an apology from the original poster would be enough. She adds that her order has 67 members, 55 of them live at the monastery. All right, now we do want to make you aware about one of the members of the Benedictine Sisters of Erie. Sister Joan Chittister's stances on contraception and women's ordination are known to contradict the official teachings of the Catholic Church. She recently participated in an event with former lawmaker Liz Cheney, and we here at EWTN in no way condone Sister Chittister's views that contradict the Catholic Church. Well, the Archdiocese of Cincinnati says that it will discontinue its partnerships with the Girl Scouts. Archbishop Dennis Schnur says the organization promotes a false and harmful view of sex and gender. In a letter, he says in part that the group has, quote, contributed to normalizing a sexual and gender ideology contrary to the Catholic understanding of the human person made male and female in the image and likeness of God. The Archdiocese of Cincinnati serves around 500,000 faithful. Well, the Vatican Commission charged with the protection of minors releases its first annual report. It features research from 5 continents, summarizes safeguarding efforts worldwide, and is meant to be a tool for accountability and a step towards transparency.
To all victims and survivors, I want to assure you that our desire is to do everything possible to continue welcoming you and addressing you in all the unjust suffering that you have endured. We praise your courageous testimony, and at the same time, we recognize that you are likely tired of empty words. Your suffering and wounds have opened our eyes to the fact that as a church we have failed to care for victims, and that we didn't defend you and that we resisted understanding you when you needed us most. Nothing we do will ever be enough to fully repair what has happened. But we hope that this report and those that will come, compiled with the help of victims and survivors at the center, will help to ensure the firm commitment that these events never happen again in the church.
During a news conference, Cardinal O'Malley says that we must listen to victims and survivors of abuse. He also thanked victims and survivors for their courage to speak out and ended his speech by dedicating the annual report to them. One advocate for abuse survivors also weighed in.
The survivor needs to be more and more involved all the time in this. And I believe that my colleagues, and first Pope Francis, obviously, but then my colleagues in the commission and so many other people are now bringing this to light. And we're using words that were not used before, you know, justice, truth, reparation, this conversion for non-recurrence ever again. That's things that the church needs to take incredibly seriously.
And an interview with EWTN abuse survivor Juan Carlos Cruz, you just saw right there, stressed the need for everyone to speak out and help survivors, believing them, accompanying them, making reparation to ensure that the scourge of abuse will never happen again. He expressed his hope that the report will bring more accountability and encouraged the church not to be afraid ever of victims. Well, finally tonight, a group of faithful will gather every Wednesday at a shopping center in Mexico, but they're not going shopping. Instead, they are praying the rosary in front of a statue of Our Lady of Guadalupe. The initiative began as a way to attract fallen away Catholics, and now it takes place every Wednesday and features flowers and singing. The organizer says that it is a reminder to people who may have forgotten that they need God. Indeed, we do. And we thank you for watching tonight. Remember, you can follow us on social media, Facebook, X, and Instagram at EWTN News Nightly. I'm Tracy Sable. Good night, and God bless.